by exploiting these scale economies in farming, you got a 42% increase in total output. And even more importantly, because we're concerned about people and their incomes, a 68% increase in income per worker in agriculture.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Developing countries have many small farms, and high-income countries have large farms and much higher productivity as well. So does this mean there are too many farms in the world, especially in low-income countries? Well, that question forms the title of a paper by Andrew Foster of Brown and Mark Rosenzweig of Yale. And Mark joins me now. Welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello, Tim.
Mark, our story today focuses on India, where, of course, there are many, many small farms. What size is the typical farm in India? How does it compare to the sort of farms you'd see in Europe or the US?
So the average farm size right now in India is about 2.5 acres.
Oh.
And that compares to an average farm size in the United States now of 400 acres. Mm. 90% of the farms in India are less than 10 acres, while 90% of farms in the United States are above 10 acres. So the differences in farm size is quite significant.
These tiny farms in India, if they become a little bit bigger, do they always become more productive as a result?
All right, so this is a good question. And for 70 years, economists looking at data from India and from many, many low-income countries have found the same thing. When you move from a small farm to a slightly larger farm, say our 2.5 acre farm to a 5 acre farm, the evidence is very clear. Productivity per acre goes down.
Oh.
And when you look across the span of almost all of the farms that the economists have looked at from representative samples, they find that there's a continuing decrease in productivity as we move up farm scale, from which they concluded that small farms are beautiful, small farms are good, and land reform programs that keep farms small are the optimal thing to do.
And this isn't just an India thing. This is true across the board in low-income countries.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as I said, it's for 70 years, economists have been looking at this in many countries and finding exactly the same thing. So this is typical, and it led to the conclusion that there was nothing wrong with having small farms in low-income countries. So the problem is, of course, that because the farms are so small, and as I mentioned, the distribution of farms is such that you hardly ever see any actual large farms, it was very difficult for anyone to conclude that a large farm in India or Nigeria or in Indonesia would actually be even more productive. And the first sort of breakthrough in our paper is that we use data, not data we collected ourselves, we use data from a very well-known and a very accurate survey of farms in a section of India that oversampled larger farms. So, for example, in the area that they sampled, it's about in 5 states of India in just 20 villages, just matching sort of what you see overall in India, 95% of the farms were less than 10 acres. But because of the oversampling of large farms, in the actual data in the survey, almost half of the farms were greater than 10 acres. So we could see for the first time some larger farms and could actually compare larger farms to smaller farms. And when you do that, you see something that's very different.
Globally, what we can see so far then is that there is no simple relationship between size and productivity. You can't always say, let's make this farm a little bit bigger and it will be a little bit better. But if you look globally, some of those very large farms, they must be fabulously productive.
No, exactly. You can pretty much say that in the high-income countries, bigger is better, and farms are getting larger and larger, and farmers that you talk to want to expand their farm size. While in the low-income countries, where the scale is very much different, they're in a different world, where farms are really tiny, then it's clear that if you have a 3-acre farm and somebody offers the opportunity to sell you another acre that you can add to your farm, there's no reason to do it because your productivity is going to go down. So that's sort of the paradox, right? That we see this inverse relationship in low-income countries over the world. In high-income countries, bigger is clearly better.
Well, let's try and resolve this paradox. Why is it that if that extra acre gets added to the 3-acre farm, why does productivity go down?
All right. So this relates to the market for labor. So what we found in these data, and it's also observed in many other data sets, is that for operations on a farm, of course, you need labor. And on the very smallest farms, the family labor is sufficient to carry out the operation. So if you have two or three adult family members, which is typical for a farm, say, in India, and you have a two-acre farm, and you want to do today, you need to weed, you have enough labor to carry out fully the operation on that day, and even have leftover time to work outside of the farm. Now, as you expand the scale up to a certain point, then family labor is sufficient, and more of the time spent by the family members will be devoted to working on the farm. But when the farm size gets even bigger, then the family needs, in order to maintain the relevant efficient labor-land ratio, needs to hire labor, needs to bring in extra labor. And the problem with that is it's costly to find labor on a given day. And we estimate that for a full-time hired labor, the costs that are associated with finding a labor, compensating that labor for walking to your farm or taking a bicycle to your farm or even taking a bus to your farm is about half of the total cost. So now when we get to this point at which the farm should use more labor in order to maintain its efficiency, they compare the cost, the profitability of adding that extra labor, paying this fixed cost, with the profitability of just not doing it. And they find that it's actually more profitable to not pay those costs and farm with the less than optimal number of family members. So then as farm scale increases, the ratio of labor, which is family labor, which is fixed, to land is going down. And as it goes down, productivity is lower and lower and lower. So that's basically what you're seeing over most of the span of farm sizes in low-income countries, that they're basically not using hired labor because it's so expensive to match the labor that they need. So for example, let's suppose they need 12 hours of labor, and they've got two family members who are, you know, can work, say, 8 hours. That's fine. The two of them can work the 12 hours. But suppose they need 20 hours. So they really need an extra 4 hours of labor. Well, it just doesn't pay to pay these costs of finding that labor to get those extra 4 hours. They simply don't do it. That's the basic reason why you see this decline over the major span of farms in these countries. But then you reach a point where it becomes profitable to defray the cost because the demand for labor is now so high, the need for those extra hours is so profitable that you're going to do it. Okay, so then as now farm size continues to increase, you're going to use hired labor, you're going to get to the optimal, again, labor-land ratio until with the farm size big enough, you're going to get about a farm just as efficient at this higher scale as the lower scale, just because of these, what we call transaction costs of hiring labor.
At the other end of that scale, when you get to these very, very large farms, then these efficiencies of scale, they really kick in, do they?
All right. So then we get this additional feature. Now we look to what's well known. You look at a large farm in the United States or in Europe, people have seen pictures, right? This massive machinery. And so then as farm scale increases, you're able to take advantage of the economies of scale associated with machinery. And we give some simple examples, but we also quantify in particular one kind of mechanized equipment. So for example, you can rent an 8-row harvester or a 4-row harvester. And it's obvious that an 8-row harvester can harvest a lot more crop per minute than a 4-row harvester. But of course, if your farm is only 4 rows wide, you can't take advantage of the 8-row harvester. So that's one obvious economies of scale in equipment. But the second is that the price of renting an 8-row harvester versus a 4-row harvester, where the 8-row harvester is obviously twice as efficient, is not twice as much. But so if you have a small farm, you can't take advantage of those obvious scale economies. Another example is sprayer equipment, where sprayers have different power. And the greater the power of the sprayer, the greater the radius of the spray. Well, again, if you have a very small farm, you can't make use of a high power sprayer, which is much more efficient because you don't need to spray such a wide area. And so you're stuck with using these small sprayers, which are far less efficient.
So we have this curve globally where productivity goes down as farms get a little bit bigger and then goes way, way up as they get larger and larger and larger. With the data that you have, were you able to replicate that for farms in India?
With the data that we have, which has this oversampling of large farms so that we could actually observe this U-shape that we see globally right in India. And by the way, we're not the only ones to have found the U-shape based on oversampling larger farms. Almost the same time that we were looking at this for India, there was a survey done in an African country where they found exactly the same thing. When they oversampled large farms, they found the U-shape alive and well, while if they used a standard data set that had a representative sample of farms, you just find the inverse relationship that everyone else was finding.
Using this, what's the optimal size for a farm in India?
All right, so this is a good question and one that we explored. Why isn't it 1,000 acres or 500 acres? What we decided to do is not something fanciful, but to use the actual technology that was available in terms of equipment within India, use our estimates of the transaction costs, and figure out and quantify what the optimal farm scale would be if they were to fully exploit the existing scale economies of machinery in India. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that the optimal farm size was 25 acres. Now, why was it 25 acres, not 400 acres? We constrained ourselves to using existing technology. There are almost no farms above 25 acres, and therefore, you're not going to find any equipment in India that's relevant for farms larger than 25 acres.
Of course, yes.
Right? So you're in this equilibrium where even if you had a 25-acre farm and you look around, right, you're not going to see equipment that's going to make you want to enlarge your farm scale. So there's an equilibrium where the supply of farm equipment is relevant to the scale of farming, and the scale of farming is constrained by the availability of equipment. But of course, that's not the only constraint for why farms are staying small.
Given this, how many fewer farms would there be in India? How many fewer farm workers, I guess, as well?
All right, so what we found when we calibrated the model using the national data from India is that if you made every farm size at the optimal scale of about 25 acres, that you would reduce the number of farms by 87%, which is about 83 million farms that are surplus and redundant. And in addition, we found a smaller reduction, but still a considerable reduction, in the size of the labor force that's necessary to sustain these optimally scaled farms of about 16%. About 16% of labor was redundant, 87% of farms were redundant.
And would this hypothetical smaller number of farms produce as much food?
Not only as much, but actually more. What we found is that by exploiting these scale economies, even with a reduction in the number of laborers in farming, you got a 42% increase in total output. And even more importantly, because we're concerned about people and their incomes, a 68% increase in income per worker in agriculture.
These are huge numbers, aren't they? And potential difference, extraordinary difference to millions of people. Is there any chance that this is going to happen?
In the history of the world, we've actually never seen a natural market-driven increase in scale and a consolidation of farms. And the U-shape, in a sense, explains why this is true. Now, let me point out that in India, more or less, property rights are well protected. People's farm sizes are registered. There is a market. You can sell and buy land, although very few people do. But if we think about the U-shape, we take our typical farmer who has 3 acres of land, and he's thinking about increasing the scale, taking the, and he says, you know, I want to get my 25-acre farm. So what he has to do is he has to transact with all his neighbors. Because remember, this farm needs to be contiguous. So the people he transacts with have to be the ones that are around his farm. And they all realize the gains that this farmer will get. And so he has to do all these transactions at once. Because if he does them one at a time, he's going to go down the productivity curve, right? When he adds 3 acres to 3 acres, he gets 6 acres, and those 6 acres are even less productive. So the farmer that's next to him with a 3-acre farm, he's getting some profits per acre. And so the value to him of selling the farm would be what compensates him for giving up that flow of income per year, right? Mm-hmm. But what the farmer who wants to buy the farm is going to offer him is actually going to be less than that, because what it will do is reduce his flow of profits per year. So it's just almost impossible to conceive that these many transactions could take place simultaneously so that they can leap over the chasm of this U to go from the 3 acres to the 25 acres. And as I said, in the history of the world, we've never seen that happen. Most of the land consolidation efforts have been driven by government fiat mandates, as it were, for farm size. And the latest one that we saw documented was, in fact, in France at the end of World War II.
Mark, this is fascinating, and the prize is potentially huge. It's not really something that is often discussed, perhaps because of the practical difficulties that you've just outlined. Is this something that development economists should be thinking more of? We tend to discuss things like seed and fertilizer technologies for smallholders. Is there a bigger prize out there?
We think it is. And the first step that needs to be taken is the recognition that the inverse relationship is just an artifact of the data just describing the small farms that currently exist in India. So the current Ministry of Agriculture in India says correctly that there's no evidence to suggest that small farms are the fundamental barrier to higher productivity. And he's correct. For 70 years, economists have been showing this inverse relationship. Basically, the consensus among economists and policymakers is smallholders are okay. All we need to do is to look for technology that might augment the productivity of these smallholders. So, for example, the Gates Foundation major agenda includes digital technology to help small farmholders. And they're giving out literally millions of dollars to subsidize the idea that we could somehow turn these small farms into farms that have the same productivity as larger farms, just taking as given that small farms are here to stay and the scale itself is not so important. So yes, we need to pay more attention to scale. We need first to demonstrate that, in fact, scale is a problem. Now, a very interesting fact is that the recognition that small scale is a fundamental problem that is a barrier to low productivity was not something new in India. Back in 1947, a commission was set up at the time of India's independence to study the question of what to do with the very, very large land holdings that existed at the time among a certain class of Indian farmers. Their brief was to figure out how to split up the farms. What size should they split the farms into? They actually considered as well what the optimal farm size in India was. But the beginning of the report started with, it's well known that a major problem of Indian agriculture is the small scale of farms. They did what we did. They said, well, what's the optimal scale? And the optimal scale was based on what was profitable for having two bullocks, which were the major motive power at the time. And they figured that the optimal farm size was 10 acres. And they figured at what would happen if they made all farms 10 acres. And they got a 66% reduction in farm size. This was 1948, an official mandated federal commission that basically did the same thing without as good data, but weren't far off on either their conclusion and their, in a sense, simulation of what would happen to Indian agriculture. And they also considered, you know, how are we going to do this? You know, how could this happen? Can it be through cooperative farming and other things? And they concluded what we would conclude today, that this is not going to happen unless it's accompanied by industrialization. There needs to be a place for these workers to go to earn a living. And therefore, you're going to need a balanced growth. You're going to need a dimension of the economy that's outside of agriculture to absorb all these workers.
Absolutely fascinating. And it just shows that a very simple but very difficult question opens up all sorts of other questions and all sorts of possibilities as well. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper, if you want to read it, is called Are There Too Many Farms in the World? Labour Market Transaction Costs, Machine Capacities and Optimal Farm Size. And the authors are Andrew Foster and Mark Rosenzweig. It is NBER Working Paper 23909. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure that you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. And whether you do or whether you don't, you will always find more of our past episodes, as ever, at voxdev.org.